Hello, Mavs fans. Welcome to Pod Maverick. I'm going to call this one happy hour, largely because I am having a cocktail because it's been one of those days. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined as always by Josh Bowe. We're coming to you on Monday, May 18th. Josh, how are you?
Okay. I have to remember how to do this.
We picked
the longest break we took.
We picked a great time to go on a break. And let me be clear here. Multiple things happened at once for Josh and I to miss this long. The first was that our podcast hosting company was like, hey, we're going to transfer your pod over to something else. Please don't post anything on Sunday, which was also the day of the lottery. So we had no ability to post something. Now, could we have recorded? Yes, but we each have wives and the Mavs fell tonight. So I made the executive decision to not do anything. Something else also happened that weekend. My wife and I decided to foster two like 9 week old puppies, among our dumbest like snap decisions. Now we're having a great time, but it's one of those things where anyone that's had a puppy, you forget how you cannot do anything. When the puppy awake.
No, I will go to my grave. Having a puppy was harder than having a
significantly
human child.
Significantly.
That's had both. That's how it was. I'm sure there's someone listening that's tearing their hair out right now. It's like, you haven't met my 3-year-old. And I'm like, I get it. But man, puppies are like, babies get to a point where that you can kind of leave them. Like, you could find little breaks throughout the day. And if you get your sleep, if they can sleep, then that's kind of half the battle. Puppies are like, you're in it. You're in it for like 6 weeks, maybe even that first year.
And these might be 9 week old puppies. They might be Great Dane mixes. I mean, they are huge.
Yeah, those the paws are hilariously
big. If anybody's missed any of my recent videos, you can find it on my Instagram. But anyway, we just like we're in this clusterfuck because then not only those things, then you and I each, for our day jobs, each had to go out of town at the same time. That has never, in 15 years of doing this sort of stuff, that has never happened. Anyway, so we missed a whole bunch, and we're going to talk about it here. So first we'll start with our belated reactions to the draft lottery. Did you watch the draft lottery, or did you just kind of find out about it on the internet?
No, I didn't watch it because Mother's Day. Which we also didn't even mention, like the lottery was also Mother's Day.
On Mother's Day, right.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's a big deal for us. So I didn't watch it. And my reaction, I mean, you know me, I'm pretty non-pulsed about much these days. You know, if this was 2019, maybe I'd have a little more, piss and vinegar about it. But I mean, they fell back, which is annoying. I saw that there was a reaction, you know, there are people mad that they should have done more to tank. And I don't,
which we talked about at length. I think we agree.
I think people are allowed to have that reaction. And then I think not getting that worked up about it is also valid because we kind of knew what the odds were. So like them falling back is not like a shock. It's like, that was part of the deal. Like that's kind of what they signed up for. The thing that I will say, like my big opinion on it is just, in part of your point too, it's kind of 2 points. One is, and you've made this point, it's your point, and it's really good, about how the Mavericks kind of, they screwed themselves waiting so long to fire Nico, because it put a pause on everything. You know, they could have fired Nico last summer, made some more trades, got this moving, because the season was lost anyway. Like there was nothing to be gained this season. If they had gone, even if they had torn it down earlier, like they'd already lost the season, like the season was lost.
Game five, when
they tore it down earlier. Yeah. If they tore it down any earlier, maybe a couple more games are bad to watch. They were already bad to watch. So, you know, there's some people that are like the morale and, you know, you want to, you know, have locker room culture. And I get that too, but there's a way you can have both. And then the other part is like, I'm just kind of mystified. Not only the Mavericks, but the NBA, that like no one traded for their role players at the deadline. Like I'm watching the Detroit Pistons lose that game 7 at home, and they have no one that can dribble and they have no one that can shoot. And I know that sounds weird coming from a Mavericks team that also struggled to dribble and shoot, but they happen to have one of the best 3-point shooters of all time that they kind of just like held along for the whole season at 37 years old or however old Clay is. I'm just like, why didn't they trade for him? Why didn't the Minnesota Timberwolves? I mean, Timberwolves did trade for the backup guard from the Bulls, who was really good for them. But like, what if the Wolves also traded for like Najee Marshall, or the Pistons traded for Najee Marshall, or what if the Cavs traded for like, I don't know, someone? What if someone traded for Daniel Gafford? Like, I'm watching these playoffs, and like, I know the Mavericks weren't a good team, but they had good players. And when they fall back in the lottery, I understand people being like, you know, what was the point of that Chris Middleton scoring 35 points and a win kind of thing? And it kind of hints at that there was kind of a lack of direction this season, which hopefully now is kind of rectified with, you know, all the front office moves.
Funny point that I really stuck with me. It might have been Bontemps or Tim McMahon on the Hoop Collective pod mentioning the Pistons, saying that sometimes franchises can think their window is a lot longer than it really is.
And it's never as long as you think it is.
And we as Mavericks fan learned that the hard way. Like, it was just, you know, the window was closed, but it anyway, like I just found myself very frustrated because, okay, you know, we luck into the first pick last year. Like, it was the Mavericks had never moved up. They've only moved down or stayed. And then they moved up last year in one big swoop. So it's like all the sort of luck that had been going against them for the better part of the franchise's lottery history kind of paid off in one fell swoop. So when they had an opportunity, an outside opportunity at the sixth worst odds, and ended up at the ninth worst, ended up in the ninth position due to the combination of winning that last game of the regular season plus the coin flip, where they like, it was very maddening. Now, I also find it very maddening, and we're going to kind of talk about this, is like, I'm not thrown myself into my draft coverage, into my draft like research and things on my own, largely because I've not wanted to get overly attached to anyone, because I've really liked big portions of this draft. And if you head over to MavsMoneyball.com, at the top of the page there's a sections and a draft coverage, and you're going to see all the different stuff that our team has written. And unfortunately, over the last several days, I don't know how to feel about me and Isaac Harris liking the same guys, because I usually give my buddy over there shit for some of his favorite players that he's liked over the years. But like, he's been hard up following Mikael Brown Jr., who had an outstanding combine relative to a lot of the other guards. In fact, I don't really think anybody had a bad combine. But when you're deciding between players of a certain ilk, you know, the extra inch, the one more made shot, a lot of that stuff can really make a difference. And so the Mavericks falling to ninth, I was really into Brown, and I just don't think Brown is going to be there. I just don't think Brown is going to be there for the Mavericks to draft. And I'll tell you why I love him. And this is not a good draft assessment. Okay. This is Kirk being a fucking idiot. I'll just put that out there. This is my fandom. I don't want Cooper Flagg shooting threes. I want Cooper Flagg dunking the ball. So as I build a team around Cooper Flagg, I want other people who can shoot threes. And Mikael Brown's three-point rate and his free throw rate for a guy who is a true 6'4 guard without shoes, I was just like, this is the man for me. This is my guy. This is who I love. And yeah. Now I don't get him. I likely don't get him. I've heard from some of the people. I don't really talk. Yeah, it's not true. I talk to a lot of people. Yeah. I just don't report stuff. But I was told like on the day of the lottery, the Mavericks were already sniffing around Brown, which duh. He practiced at the Mavericks facility last year when the Louisville came into town. I'm sure they got a good look at him then. And I've been staring at my combine board and like the guys who are available. I'm going to be happy with whoever Dallas picks. They have three picks in this year's draft, two in the first round. For only the second time in franchise history do they have two picks in the first round going into draft day. So I'm just I to pivot away from lottery reactions. Have you done any reading yet? Have you kind of like done anything? Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
No. I'm going to be honest. I barely know much about these guys. I know Brown was the guy I kind of lost, you know. All these guys, it's really easy to find the YouTube highlights that make them look like no doubters. But Brown's sure. YouTube highlights feel especially awesome. I think the combination of his size at guard and the shooting, I watched a little bit of him, and that's enticing. The read I get from Brown is it's kind of like there's no real scenario. It's hard to believe that the Mavericks would draft him, because it's like if his medical's clear, he won't be there at 8. And then if his medical or 9, and then if his medicals don't clear, you know, is he getting drafted in the, you know, no, default, does he just fall the, like, right. Why would you take a guy with iffy medicals? So it's kind of feels like a no win situation. Cause he's, if his medicals are clear, I don't see how he makes it all the way down to 9, but weirder things have happened.
Yeah. And it was, you know, again, we don't want to, I am a person who says things pretty loudly with my chest when I have an opinion. I am not firm in any of my opinions on any of these guys, but I will say I had a great time following the draft combine. There were some real winners and losers and element, like the measurements were a really fun one, in terms of what guys kind of came out on top. And why is this not working? Sorry, I'm pulling up my browser just froze up on me. ESPN NBA mock. I'm very interested to see where a lot of these guys go, because the you know, your top 4, top 6, whatever you want to say it, are kind of set within a certain range. But then, you know, Darius Acuff Jr. was a guy who we were asked about all season. He came in at a legit 6'2" with a 6'7" wingspan, which makes him being as abhorrent on defense as he was all the funnier, because he has like the measurements of like a shutdown cornerback, like just an absolute boss of an athlete, and also did a lot of the athleticism drills look great. Kingston Fleming's came in at pretty short, 6'2" and 6'2", I think, and I don't think he had a plus wingspan at all, but his interviews were kind of amazing. Like if you heard him talk or listen to anything he had to say, he could talk you into a lot. My friend Josh McSwag referred to him as just a guy, and I think that's actually a fair potential assessment, because most people in the NBA draft become just guys. He could talk you into a lot. So like that element was really fun. You know, Nate Ament, like my secret fear for the Dallas Mavericks, told everyone at the lottery or at the combine that doctors have told him he could grow up to 2 more inches. The Michigan dudes won the draft. Like if you wonder how Michigan won the national championship, it's because they had a center who was 7'3" without shoes on, who could pass and play excellent defense. And then 2 forwards were legit 6'8" plus without shoes on. One of them, Yaxel Lindeberg, who is close to my age, and God, what's the other gentleman's name? Morez. I can't find him here. Morez Johnson Jr., who's younger at 20. And like, there, it's just, if you have a player that you are interested in, or an archetype, I think is probably a better way to say it, there's a lot of dudes in this draft that you could talk yourselves into. And sort of what's ended up happening, at least within the Mavs community the last several days, since the lottery, is a lot of talking themselves into stuff. I don't think that he was the first person to say it, but even before the draft, there was a lot of discussion about if the Mavericks stay at 8 or draft 9, would they have interest in trading down? And I know, slightly biased, put that out on his, show with Ben and Skin. And like, for me, I want to get your reaction to that, like as a concept, because for me, trading down just reiterates the institutional failure of the team to not tank properly.
Yeah. It depends on what it is. If they're trading down, they probably, they would need a very enticing future pick, like in a 2027 draft, 2028 draft. And even then, because I have, you know, from the people we've talked to, the next draft is not, you never know, it's a year away, but draft is supposed to not be great or something like that compared to this one.
The Thunder have picks 12 and 17. That's what,
so would you trade down to 12 and 17? Mm-hmm. More bites at the apple. I don't think that's awful, but my kind of thing is, you know, if it was in the NBA, you want the best play, like the best players, like it's five players on the floor. Like I kind of have football brain thinking about trading down where it's like, oh yeah, trade down. Like the more picks you get, you know, the better it is.
But I don't like trading with the NBA. Thunder.
Yeah. I don't want to trade with the Thunder either. Yeah. If the Thunder want to move up to get a guy, why don't you just be like,
take that guy.
Take that guy. Yeah. But I mean, look, the Mavericks are going to be in a world of hurt, talent acquisition wise for the next 4 years comes the draft. And if you haven't noticed, it seems like trades and free agency don't exist anymore. Mm-mm. In the way that we used to think of it, pre this current CBA. So turning one pick into two picks that are still relatively somewhat within range of each other, I could see the logic, but I think if I had my truth serum, I would say just take the best player at nine, because this is literally going to be the best draft pick you will ever have in the Cooper Flagg era. Cross your fingers, nothing goes crazy. You could probably get a 17 if you really wanted an extra non-lottery first round pick. You could find other ways to get one. Why don't you trade one of your vets to do that instead?
Bing, bing, bing.
Do that. So
it's a good take. I like that take. And I want to circle back to that point about team building a little later in the show. So we're going to take a quick break here. As you know, or you may not know, since we haven't recorded in a week, there are three ways to support this show. The main is by simply subscribing. If you're watching on YouTube or listening through an app and you haven't subscribed, go ahead and click that subscribe button. The second way to do so is by telling your friends. You know, we know that you guys have a lot of choice in the Mavericks podcasting realm. My single favorite thing, and I he and I are friendly now, so I can say this, but I'm pretty sure I once yelled at Mavs Film Room to start doing stuff, and now they have a successful podcast, and I would like to you know, there's just a lot of options and people are sharing their opinions, as they should, because the internet is free and we should do so. So those of you who are still spending time here with us, we appreciate that, but we would like more of you. Third and final way is, if you're at all interested, there's a couple of links in the show notes. We'll be right back after these ads. Okay. I'm going to host a show on Wednesday. My son has basketball practice on Monday and Wednesday night, so it's easy to just come home and host a secondary show. So if you guys have some draft takes, you know, I it's a little rough doing these every week, even though I think I should right up until draft. But if you have opinions on stuff, we have a lot of things to cover. I want to hear what you have to say. So come ready for that Mavs party. All right. So the next big piece of news, kind of, and the draft will be kind of the undercurrent for a lot of our discussion, I think, for the up until the draft. But the thing we didn't get to cover at all, I don't even think we ran an article on it about Mavs Moneyball, which is a bit of a mistake, is basketball, or president of basketball operations, Masai Ujiri, has hired Mike Schmitz, formerly of ESPN, former Portland Trailblazers assistant GM, to be the Dallas Mavericks general manager. I, for one, think this is just beyond fantastic. Just beyond fantastic. Maybe we did cover it. I'm an idiot. Yeah. I'm the editor of a website.
We did do it. You give yourself more credit. No, go ahead. So you said you liked this.
I love this. Okay. I am such a curmudgeon about what Dallas has done over the last 20 years, largely because I don't think they maximize certain windows. And during the Dirk years, you know, after they won the championship, Mark Cuban was very much like, look at what I did, and then proceeded to sort of insert himself in too many processes. And when I watched Masai Ujiri's initial press conference, the first thing that came to mind for me was like just how professional he was. And then, you know, it's not to say that Donnie and Mark weren't professional, but there was a bit of a cowboy element going on with all that. I think that's a fair enough criticism to offer. And then, you know, you bring in a guy like Schmitz, who has a track record of talent evaluation publicly that is pretty hard to beat. He has thoughts going back 10 years on big guys and was right about a lot of people. So given where the Mavericks are drafting, you know, big swing central, and it gives me a lot of hope and excitement, because honestly, I was a little worried about Masai by himself, because Masai by himself tends to favor at least dudes that have been selected under his management experience have been like big, tall forwards who are not great shooters. And the Toronto Raptors might've been good. They were never once fun. Sorry.
Yeah. I like it. Look, when something is bad that happened to the org that happened a year ago, you have to kind of start over, right?
Yep.
And I kind of like that these two moves, bringing in Masai, bringing in Mike Schmidt, like all outside people not related to the Mavs. I know, you know, love Michael Finley, one of my favorite players of all time. Matt Riccardi seems like a really smart dude. Love that he grew up a Mavs fan. Seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. Seems like he knows what he's doing. When you consider his track record and where he's come from and his reputation, even before he got to Dallas, I like new. There's just something about new, a fresh set of eyes to look at this thing, that I think makes a big difference. And I think it also helps, you know, don't know how much this matters, but like the perception, like if you want to truly bring people back into Mavericks basketball after, you know, the betrayal, like telling everyone, hey, new people in charge, like we are turning a new leaf. Like it's hard to turn a new leaf if like all the same people are still working there. Mm-hmm. So I applaud it. Like, I don't know enough about Schmitz to make a definitive, like this is, he's a great talent evaluator or not. It seems like he has a decent enough track record, and Portland has put together a pretty decent team over the last like year or two, young, talented team. But again, I just, an outside hire, like two outside hires that weren't on like the long list of rumors, bringing kind of a sense of professionalism. I can't say that word, back to the org. Like that's great.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I'm just usually so negative about things. Just as is my deal, and it.
I mean, like 3 months ago, there was a chance, like the president of basketball ops, we thought might be Jason Kidd. So
I mean,
like,
shit. I mean, when you look, well, so actually, yeah. That's a great way to look at this. So
yeah,
go back 53 weeks ago, heading into the lottery. 53 weeks later, where the Mavericks are right now, I would say this is among the best possible range of outcomes that I could have possibly hoped for organizationally. Is that crazy?
No, like if you had a crystal ball that told you the day after Luka got traded that the Mavericks would have Cooper Flagg and Masai Ujiri would be running their basketball ops, you'd be like, wait, what? Like, did a bomb go off? Like, what? Like, did someone get arrested? Like, what happened? So yeah, no, I think that's accurate. I can't imagine them being, you know, they're starting from the absolute bottom. So they still have a ways to go to reach the Luka levels of where the organization was in terms of success. But I don't know any other better way that they could have done it than what they've done the last month. Yeah. I mean, there's one more thing that they could do, but I don't know if you want to talk about it.
Yes, actually, what is it? Am I missing something?
A new head coach?
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's why I think that's still up in the air. We'll just kind of touch base on it. No one's come out and said he's still the head coach. And there's two kind of groups of fans around this where it's like, well, he said during the press conference that he's spoken with Jason Kidd, therefore he's the head coach. I don't believe for a minute he had spoken with Jason Kidd prior to that press conference. Like, not like Kidd was not at the press conference.
Like, so you think Mizrahi was lying?
I think I'm sure they've exchanged like texts or something, yeah, okay. But you know, not like a conversation.
Yeah, you think just the loosest definition of I've talked right. to him. Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, again, I talked about him earlier. Isaac Harris wrote in his Substack that when he was at the combine, the question that he was actually asked the most was about Jason Kidd. And like, I would say that, you know, Isaac is a former Dallas Mavericks employee. He and Nick at their show are largely Mavs friendly. They, you know, I wouldn't say they shy away from criticism, but they're not like a grumpy show. To put that out into the universe that he thinks that there is an open question about Kidd it honestly holds a lot of weight for me, because there's a lot of downside for that. Like, you know, he's the one that asked Nico Harrison the tough question last year of like, why do you think you should still have a job? And so for Isaac to sort of put that out in the universe that he's not sure if kid's going to be coached oddly holds some weight for me. I might not be explaining why.
No, I know what you're saying. If Isaac is saying it, then it means something different coming from him than like coming from us.
Right. Because it's, you know, they're just,
we're cynical by nature.
Yeah. And so for him to say, I don't know about this, because he could just as easily not have said that. See, that's the thing that I think a lot of fans misunderstand about media folks. And maybe they don't misunderstand it, because I criticize Dallas Mavericks media quite a lot with people who don't share stuff that maybe they should. So it's like, by the act of saying something like that is in it to me, like brave insofar as this is, you know, basketball and a sport and who gives a fuck. Like, I think it's just, you know, it's an interesting spot for me. So I'm going to be very curious to see the resolution of that. I've made my personal piece expecting him to be head coach. That's where I am. But, you know, I'd rather be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Masai hasn't fired a coach. He kept George Karl. He kept Dwayne Casey. Now he did eventually move on from Casey. So there is a track record there, but also like Jason Kidd now has two new bosses, and a big part of the reason why he came to Dallas was Nico was his boss in terms of that, depending on how much validity there was in that opening press conference. So we'll see. Jason Kidd, you never know with him. That's all we can say for sure.
Isn't that the truth? So my last thing that I'd want to touch base on, because again, I want to try to keep these is relatively short, so we have more to talk about Wednesday, and so we don't say anything we don't mean to. So the Spurs are playing the Oklahoma City Thunder right now as we're talking. The score of that game is roughly, I clicked away from my score. The Spurs are up by seven with about five, six minutes to go in the game. One of the things that I've been thinking about is that if the NBA does pass this lottery reform, what they will have effectively done, and you talked about team building earlier, is they will have effectively allowed the San Antonio Spurs, and to a certain extent the Oklahoma City Thunder, but really the Spurs more than anyone else, to benefit from the lottery system luck, because they moved up three times in three drafts. They were second and they moved up to get Wemby at first, and now their odds were like they did have top five odds, but there was still only a 14% chance to get one.
Right.
Even then it might have been a little higher, but not significantly higher. Then they moved up from fifth to fourth to get Castle. Then they moved up from eighth to second to get Dylan Harper. And one of the things that the rules don't allow for, if they do pass these rules, is you cannot move up to top four two times in a row, which would effectively have eliminated Harper. Now, the team has only kind of recently started to put Harper out there more and more, but the dude's a fucking killer. And he's gonna extend what could be a dynasty for this team. And the NBA is changing the rules and is effectively pulling up the ladder behind the Spurs if they do this. Now, it's not for the Spurs. The Spurs are just beneficiaries of it.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how team building is really, really draft dependent now. And I have 1,000,000,000% agree. But as I'm watching this, you know, I was watching a little bit of the first half, is that these two teams are poised to effectively rule the Western Conference, injuries included, for the next four seasons, at least.
Yeah.
Which makes the team building of the Dallas Mavericks very, very interesting and very, very, very difficult, because they already have this built-in what the fuck could go wrong element, what the fuck could go right element. Like, they need some things to go their way, and like falling down in the lottery, for example, is one thing that didn't help them, as much as we're trying to be positive here. And so I'm just sort of wondering, you know, with the playoffs that you followed, because you and I aren't going to act like we watch every night, but we do kind of pay more attention. We pay more attention than I think either of us really wants to, like, because we like basketball. But I know, I think we would like a break. What have you kind of learned from these playoffs that you think the Mat, like, in terms of where the Mavericks are versus where they want to be?
That's a hard question. Are you talking about, so like, just with just looking at OKC and with the Spurs and just how do they solve that problem of those two teams?
Question. Let's think about it like this. We know the timeline for the Mavericks to be a contender is not immediately. What is a timeline for the Mavericks to become a final eight playoff team? So they win at least one playoff series.
Man. You want to say give it like another 2 or 3 years, but Cooper might be that guy. Like, you know, Luka had the Mavericks in the playoffs year two with a roster that none of us thought, at least we didn't think, was good enough to truly contend. Even with the Kristaps Porzingis trade, like even if they don't make significant changes, like Cooper might be good enough that this is like a 7 or 8 seed next season. Like if Cooper is as good as we think he could be, that's in the range of possibilities. That's kind of why I think, like, when you talk about trading down, like, they got to make this pick count, because even if they want to be bad, Cooper might refuse to allow them to be bad, you know, to be bad. Like the rebuild might be, you know, it's a problem, because like if Cooper is so good, like that's the whole point. You're trying to solve this. That's the whole problem to solve, is get a guy like Cooper. But I think there's a possibility that Cooper might be like a player that's ready to contend within the next year or two, because he might be that special. And I think if you're thinking about it that way, I don't think that necessarily means they need to go all in this summer and maximize, you know, the last Kyrie years that they have, that Kyrie is still in his prime or still showing like he's in his prime. Doesn't mean they need to make short-sighted moves, but I think they just need to be aware of, like, I don't think they can go into next season unless they do a super teardown and be like, yeah, like, you know, we're going to rebuild and we'll probably try to get, you know, another top 8, top 5 pick or whatever we can get. Like, Cooper might not allow them to do that. So I hope that they're preparing for that scenario where it's like, what do we do if Cooper kind of lifts us up higher than even we thought, and how do they build around him? And I think the challenge there is trying to keep pace with Cooper while also not going too far ahead. You know, you don't want to jump the gun and go all in. Cause, you know, I think that's kind of what the Mavericks trading, the Kristaps trade, kind of locked them into that roster. Well, it didn't really lock them in. It locked them in because they were really inactive in 2019. But you know, that was a win now move for a team that maybe needed another year of seasoning, but Luka didn't want to give them that, and they made the playoffs, and Luka almost beat a team that was better than the Mavs. So I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting, because I a year ago I would have been happy if Cooper Flagg averaged 13-5-2 for his rookie stat line. Like, who knows what the possibilities are now?
Yeah, I like that answer. My position is that if they do what I hope they do next season, which is compete, since they don't have a draft pick right now, compete as hard as possible while also making themselves a potential way station for other avenues to improve their team, trade. Because, you know, once they cleared off AD, their books are better than I realized, even though whenever I see $160 million, my brain just sort of explodes. I'm still used to like $75 million caps. But that element of this makes it very, very fun to me. There's just if they are a way station next year, they could still be playoff adjacent or play in adacent while fielding a fun team to watch. Yeah. And so that's sort of my goal. And if they're able to do that next year, then I would say the 2027-28 season, the one where they owe the Oklahoma City Thunder a pick swap, that could be the year where they really make a push for like a, you know, a 6 of 8, 7, 6, 5, you know, you never know. Because again, the Cooper element of it is the hardest to predict part. I certainly don't expect a Luka like explosion for Cooper in year two, frankly, because Cooper's rookie numbers were pretty damn awesome, even compared to Luka's. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll see where we go from there. Do you have anything else before we go then?
No, playoffs have been fun to watch. Think it, you know, I like the playoffs because it's like, oh, okay, this is, you know, when you watch the regular season, you remember like people were talking to us about like, They're trying to tell us like, oh, the Mavs are still like, they could still get into the play-in. Like they could still, you know, like in December and January when we'd already kind of known the writing was on the wall. And then you watch the playoffs and it's like, they're not, you know, it gives you a nice expectation reset and refreshes you and lets you know, no, this is what it takes. And certainly wasn't what the Mavericks put on the floor last season, but they have the guy that hopefully will get them there.
Yeah. Woo. Do you have a preference for who wins between Spurs and Thunder?
This sounds kind of crazy, but I think Spurs.
Yeah.
Which 13-year-old Josh would time travel in and strangle me to death right now.
Yeah, I appreciate like Wembanyama like annoys me, but in a good sports annoyance way. Like he gave a quote pregame today where he's like, I don't have a rivalry with Chet. And like there's video of him losing his shit that Chet Holmgren got this like is like U17 MVP like in a game that the Americans won by two. When it's just he hates Chet. It's great. I really like Dylan Harper and I really like Stephon Castle. Like they don't have a Bruce Bowen like asshole for me to hate yet. And I like
they're Harper. All too young to hate.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. And like when I saw like the Thunder today all supporting SGA winning the MVP, on the one hand it's really cool. On the other hand, like he bought them all Burberry coats. And I'm just like, you guys are so lame. Like you're lame in a way that if you know our friend Jason Gallagher seems, if you're like a fan of the team, you love them because it's like, you know, they have a very us against the world mentality, as a very stupid op-ed was written by the Oklahoman today that they placed. But for a sports point of view, it's like really fun. But I like hating them. I think I like hating them more than I like hating the Spurs right now.
That's fair. I like that take.
Okay, we'll be back next week. If anything interesting happens, of course, we'll pop in. We want to go watch the rest of the Spurs-Thunder game. And then, yeah, I can't think of anything else. Pop back on here for Wednesday. I'll be hosting a live show. Everybody, thanks so much for your time. Head on over to Mavs Moneyball. We've had a lot of stuff the last 2 weeks. If you missed anything, lots of good stuff to read. Everybody be good. Go Mavs.